Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 9th, 2025. We begin on the front page above the fold. Claims of misconduct in Paxton Buckley Lotus School District. Second lawsuit alleges inappropriate touching. Consolidation of civil complaints requested by plaintiff's attorney as motion hearing set for September 11th via Zoom. Paxton. A second lawsuit has been filed in Ford County Circuit Court alleging the repeated inappropriate touching of students by longtime Paxton Buckley Lotus teacher and former coach Rob Pacey and the neglect of administrators to properly address students' claims of abuse. The civil complaint was filed Monday by Chicago civil rights attorney Bhavani Ravidran on behalf of Jane Doe D., a one-time PBL student now living in Champaign County. Like the first lawsuit filed June 6th, also by Ravindran, it names five defendants: Pacey, the Paxton Buckley Lotus School District, former Superintendent Travis Dooley, and Cliff McClure, PBL junior high school principal Josh Didier. The latest lawsuit, seeking more than $50,000 for each of five counts, alleges that Pacey inappropriately touched and sexually battered the plaintiff. It details an alleged incident from November 2013 when she was 11 years old and in sixth grade at PBL Junior High School, part of Pacey's history and civics class. As she approached the front of the classroom to turn in a written assignment, she alleged that Pacey stepped behind her and slid his hand along her lower back, then downward until he made contact with her tailbone, with his hand resting on her buttocks, where it lingered for 5 to 6 seconds, the lawsuit said. She said she stood up straight in surprise and froze in shock. The alleged conduct was witnessed by both a fellow student and a teacher's aide, who later reported the conduct to Didier and advised the plaintiff to report it too, the lawsuit said. The plaintiff reported the incident on November 25, 2013, to Didier, who later met with her and her mother, offering to move her out of Pacey's classroom and to speak with Pacey about it. Mr. Didier did not offer to complete an investigation, initiate the Title IX process, or call the Illinois Department of Children or Family Services or the police, the lawsuit noted, adding that the district's failure to report the incident to the DCFS was in direct violation of mandatory reporter obligations. The incident also led to no disciplinary action against Pacey. Also in the suit, plaintiff claimed that Pacey, both in his history and civics class and in the lunchroom during the 2013-14 school year, would often stop behind female sixth grade students, place his hands on their shoulders, and gently and intimately squeeze and massage their shoulders without asking for permission. The plaintiff claimed that Pacey did that to her at least 20 times, starting in sixth grade and through eighth grade. While she became increasingly uncomfortable and wary of Pacey, she did not believe anything would happen if these occurrences were reported, the lawsuit said, as she had seen Pacey repeatedly doing the same thing to other female students openly in the school in view of other staff members. In an email Monday to the Ford County Chronicle, Ravindran credited the four plaintiffs she is now representing with having the courage to come forward. Speaking out about childhood abuse requires an incredible amount of courage, Ravindran said. Our clients are shedding light on their experiences to protect as many PBL students as they can. We continue to ask those with information to join in their efforts and reach out to the authorities. As of this week, Pacey had not been criminally charged or arrested and remained on paid administrative leave amid ongoing internal and law enforcement investigations. Pacey, a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School and former PBL Junior High School cross-country and track girls coach, has denied any wrongdoing. It remains unclear what action the district will take in light of the continuing number of reports, Ravindran said in her email Monday. The school board is scheduled to meet at 6 p.m. Wednesday, July 9th in the boardroom in the administrative office in Paxton. Among notable items on the agenda is a discussion on an Illinois Association of School Administrators executive search. The school district has been without a superintendent since June 30th, when Dooley's resignation went into effect. Assistant Superintendent Tara Tai has not responded to repeated requests for comment on the district's plan to fill the position. Judge Rebecca Foley of McLean County is expected to preside over both lawsuits filed against PBL, although she had been reassigned only the first one as of Monday. Ravindran has said she has filed a motion to consolidate the two civil cases into one. During a Zoom hearing Monday afternoon, Foley granted Ravindran's motion for the continued use of fictitious names for each of the first lawsuit's three plaintiffs, Jane Doe A, B, and C. Ravindran cited case law that allows the use of pseudonyms in open court proceedings when the need to protect the privacy of children, rape victims, or other particularly vulnerable parties or witnesses outweighs the public's interest in knowing their identities. Attorneys for the defendants had no objection. Foley also set an August 29th deadline for the defendants' attorneys, Emily Schmidt representing Pacey and Michael Bersani representing the other four, to file responsive pleadings, which will be considered along with other unresolved motions during a status hearing at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 11th, via Zoom. Both lawsuits note the complaints against Pacey started being made not long after Pacey was hired in 2008 as a junior high school social studies and assistant junior high cross-country coach. However, administrators repeatedly dismissed the complaints over the course of more than a decade, ignoring the school district's own policies by never notifying the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services as required, the lawsuit said. Not until this past January, when one of the alleged victims revealed her experiences with Pacey to a therapist, who subsequently contacted DCFS, was the agency ever notified, the suits alleged. And even after the district was informed of an ensuing law enforcement investigation, administrators failed to immediately discipline Pacey, who was not suspended until months later, according to the lawsuits. Down at the bottom of the front page, we have news of the Pink Patch Project. Pink patches selling fast. Paxton. Paxton Police Chief Coy Cornett spent his Independence Day holiday at Pell's Park, where he was selling pink Paxton Police Department patches to help raise funds for the Pink Patch Project. Cornett was giving away a limited quantity, too, as he was staffing an informational booth on the park's north side, joined by his wife, Lieutenant Jackie Cornett of the Ford County Sheriff's Office, and Paxton Police Officer Carlos Colon. Sitting on their table was a pink flyer promoting the availability of the Paxton Police Department's Pink Patch Project patches. According to the information provided by Cornett, the Pink Patch Project's mission is to raise awareness about the life-saving benefits of early detection of breast cancer while helping fund research, treatment, and education for finding a cure. Our program revolves around vibrant pink patches, uniquely designed by participating agencies for their involvement in the Pink Patch Project, the information from Cornett said. Throughout Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, public safety employees proudly wear these pink patches on their regular duty uniforms, sparking conversations within the community and promoting the importance of early detection and ongoing efforts against this disease. The Pink Patch Project traces its roots back to the Seal Beach, California Police Department, whose officers wore pink patches on their uniform shirts during Breast Cancer Awareness Month in 2013. In 2015, the Urendale, California Police Department took the idea a step further and sold patches to the community, raising more than $20,000 for City of Hope. In 2016, Then Irwindale Police Chief Anthony Miranda took the idea to the Los Angeles Police Chiefs Association, and 25 local agencies came on board. Since then, the program has expanded to several hundred partner agencies throughout the world and includes partners from police, sheriff, fire, EMS, and federal departments worldwide, according to information provided by Cornette. Cornette said there are now 962 participating agencies in the Pink Patch Project, including Paxton Police. The police department used impound fees, not taxes, Cornette noted, to purchase an initial 100 of its own pink patches for a cost of $281. 14 of those have been dedicated for officers' uniforms each October, while the other 86 were sold for $10 each, leaving the department with a $579 donation to the Pink Patch Project. 30 were sold to the Paxton Fire Protection District, which in turn asked the police department to give them away to the public. Cornette distributed all of those patches Friday. These patches symbolize our commitment to raising awareness and supporting those affected by breast cancer, stated a flyer at the police department's booth. By the end of Friday, Cornette had said the first 100 patches had been sold. I will order 100 more on Monday, July 7th, Cornette said, noting the order should take approximately 6 weeks to get in. Cornette credited longtime police patrolman Tom Sink as the person who laid the groundwork for us to join the Pink Patch Project. He brought the idea to me, filled out the application, designed the patch, obtained the quotes, and ordered everything, Cornette said. He is the main selling person for most of the patches. Myself and Officer Cologne have assisted Officer Sink in selling the patches and helping get the word out. Anyone interested in purchasing a pink patch can contact Paxton Police at 217-379-4315. Turning to the inside of the paper, we have a report on the 41st annual old-fashioned 4th of July celebration at Bell's Park. Celebration brings community together. Visitor to event says she's impressed with Paxton's celebration. More than 700 people were outside at Pell's Park in Paxton enjoying the music, food, and laughs with family and friends this 4th of July. Organizers said it's a yearly tradition for everyone in the community to have a fun and safe Independence Day. I have not been to any of this 4th of July stuff before for Paxton, said Sloan Pepper, a visitor at the event, so it's really fun. The 41st annual old-fashioned 4th of July celebration at Pell's Park was the place to be on Friday. Even though it was Pepper's first time at the event, she said the community welcomes everyone with open arms. Really, Paxton just wants it to be a very fun place to come and visit and play and have a good time with your family, said Paxton Area Chamber of Commerce President Don Strack. Again, you could stay here all day, or you could come for a couple of hours and then head home with your family and enjoy the rest of your evening. From the dunk tank to the car show, plus live music, food, and more, there was truly something special for everyone. One of the pioneers of this celebration said she remembers when they were first starting off. There was nothing, I mean, for many years, said Paxton resident Judy Jepson-Popel, Ford County Historical Society president. And then we had representatives from all different organizations and entities in town. More than four decades ago, Jepson Popel said the ideas started flowing, and they haven't looked back since. We wanted to make it some place where families could come, not spend a lot of money or any money, said Jepson Popel, and you know, for their families to have a safe fourth. Now every year, people from all over make sure that one of their first stops is in Paxton for the holiday. It kind of seems like a melting pot, bringing everyone from Champaign and all the other little towns around here to Paxton, Pepper said. So it's really special to see everybody with their families from out of town to come here and celebrate together and just have a really nice summer day. And now a story that has good news, bad news vibe. Ford County property taxes. finally, bills in the mail. After another delay, collections set to get underway this week. Paxton. The Ford County Treasurer's Office announced Thursday that the 2024 property tax bills will be mailed to landowners on Friday, July 11th, with the first payment installment due Friday, August 15th, and the second due Friday, October 3rd. Taxes can be paid in the Treasurer's Office in Room 102 at the Ford County Courthouse at 200 West State Street in Paxton during regular business hours, or instead deposited in the drop box in front of the courthouse. They may also be paid at any Ford County Bank or mailed to the County Treasurer if postmarked by the installment due dates, after which interest is charged on the past due amount. In cases of non-payment, reminders will be mailed October 10th, followed by the publication of the delinquent taxes list on October 29th and the tax sale on November 17th. Ford County's tax collection cycle remains a bit behind its traditional schedule of bills being mailed in late May, with the first payments due in early July. So far this decade, only in 2021 did county officials avoid a delay in the tax cycle, as bills for 2020 went out on May 28, 2021, with payment deadlines of July 2nd and September 10th. As a result of the delays in the county collecting taxes, there has been a delay in distributing the revenue collected to the county's various taxing bodies, frustrating some smaller ones in particular that depend on timely revenue to pay their bills and staff. Next, we have a story that reflects the delay in sending out the tax bills. Park District to obtain loan as it awaits property tax payments. Operating loan from Paxton Bank comes with a 5.5% interest rate. Paxton. Paxton Park District's Board of Commissioners approved obtaining a $45,000 operating loan Monday night to cover the Park District's bill as it awaits its tax revenue from the Ford County Treasurer's Office. During a special meeting Monday, June 30th, the board agreed to obtain the loan from the Ford Frederick Community Bank in Paxton at a 5.5% interest rate. The board's president, Matt Quinlan, said the loan would be obtained just in case property tax revenue from Ford County is backed up. This is more than just about making sure we're okay, Quinlan said. As soon as we get paid by the county, we'll pay that loan back. It was noted by Quinlan that the Paxton Park District has obtained loans 5 or 6 times in due to projected late arrival in tax money, the last time in 2022. Back on the front page on local journalism, $30,000 in tax credits awarded to Chronicle. State lawmakers convinced DCEO to reconsider denial of newspaper's application. Some long-awaited news came Monday, June 30th, when an email with the subject line of Local Journalism Sustainability Tax Credit Approval landed in my inbox. The email's author identified herself as Ashley Knight, the Tax Incentive Program Manager for the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunities Office of Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology. Dear Will, Knight's letter began, thank you for your participation in the Local Journalism Sustainability Tax Credit Program. We are pleased to inform you that Ford County Chronicle's LLC application has been approved. Your local news organization has been awarded a tax credit in the amount of $30,000 for the applicable calendar year. Attached to this email, you will find your official tax credit certificate for your records. Congratulations, and thank you for your continued contributions to Illinois journalism. As president of the Ford County Chronicle, LLC, in addition to my roles as news editor and co-publisher alongside colleague Andrew Roston, this news ended months of anxiety and stress over the uncertainty of whether the Local Journalism Sustainability Tax Credit would be awarded to our paper this year. If you recall, it was almost 6 months earlier when we first applied for the credit, only to be denied, despite our paper appearing to qualify, at least in my opinion. So we certainly did not have our hopes up in late June, even after we were told by the DCEO staff several weeks earlier that our paper was back in the queue for consideration. It took some resilient work, and not just on my part, to make all this happen. Our state lawmakers, who are so often criticized by the citizenry, no matter what they do, it seems, have my utmost respect and appreciation. Really, they are the ones who made this happen. After all, our state lawmakers are the ones who passed this tax credit back in summer 2024, finally giving local, independently owned news outlets like my own, the ones committed to their communities, some hope for their survival in a long, struggling industry that needs all the help we can get. And after all, our state lawmakers are the one who pulled some strings on behalf of the Chronicle to convince the DCEO to reconsider its denial of the Chronicle's application for the tax credit, which the DCEO thankfully did. Among those who stepped up to help the Chronicle were Representative Jason Bunting, Republican of Edmonton, and State Senator Chris Bachman, a Republican of Shannonawn. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 9th. Olga Allen, Covington, Kentucky. Olga Allen, 81, of Covington, Kentucky, formerly of Thawville, died Thursday, June 26th at her residence. Cremation rites were accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Arnaga. Dolores B. Claus, Pendleton, Oregon. Dolores B. Petalcow Ryan Claus, 95, formerly of Melbourne, died Wednesday, June 15th at an assisted living facility in Pendleton, Oregon. A memorial service will be held in the fall in Melbourne. Glenn V. Cawthorn, and that's spelled C-O-T-H-E-R-N, Gibson City. Glenn V. Cawthorn, 82, of Plainfield, formerly of Gibson City and Elliott area, died at 12:24 p.m., Tuesday, June 24th, at St. Joseph's Medical Center in Joliet. Funeral services were held Thursday, July 10th, at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City. Burial followed at Drummer Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the Gibson City Melvin Sibley Booster Club to be used for the track and field program. Linda K. Enghausen, Fisher. Linda K. Enghausen, 87, of Fisher, died Tuesday, July 1st at her home in Fisher. Private family burial was held at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to the Champaign County Humane Society. Jim Crow Fox, Paxton. Jim Crow Fox, 75, of Paxton, died Sunday, June 29th. Funeral services were held Sunday, July 6th at the First Lutheran Church in Paxton. Burial followed at Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the First Lutheran Church in Paxton or the PBL Booster Club. Reen May Fouss, and that's spelled F-U-O-S-S. Buckley. Maureen May Fouss, 86, of Buckley, died at 3:50 a.m. Tuesday, July 3rd at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton-on-Pels. Funeral services were held Monday, July 7th at Bear Family Funeral Services in Buckley, with the Reverend Dale Fjordbotten officiating. Burial followed in Woodland Cemetery in rural Buckley. Memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley. Nora Haroon, Onarga. Nora Haroon, 35, of Onarga, died Thursday, July 3rd at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. Funeral Mass was held Tuesday, July 8th. At the Immaculate Conception Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church in Gilman, with Father Santiago Corona officiating. Burial will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to Iroquois County Animal Rescue or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Guy T. Kruger, that's K-R-U-E-G-E-R, Buckley. Guy T. Kruger, 59, of Buckley, died Thursday, June 26th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Cremation rites were accorded. A memorial visitation will be from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Monday, July 14th at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. A memorial service will follow the visitation at 11:30 a.m. at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Woodland Cemetery in rural Buckley. Memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Roberta R. Martin, Gibson City. Roberta Ruth Martin, 88, of Gibson City, died at 1:44 p.m. Saturday, July 5th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held Thursday, July 10th at Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with Miles Reck officiating. Burial followed in Mackinac Township Cemetery in Mackinac. Memorials may be made to her church or a humane society. Harold L. Merkel, Lovington. Harold L. Merkel, 74, of Lovington, died at 7:30 a.m. Tuesday, July 1st, at his home. Memorial graveside services will be at 2 p.m. Sunday, July 13th, at Keller Cemetery in Lovington, with military rites by the Lovington American Legion Post No. 429. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Christine L. Ornelas, and that's spelled O-R-N-E-L-A-S. Onarga. Christine L. Ornelas, Chris, 67, of Onarga, died Friday, June 27th, at her daughter's residence. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, July 11th, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga. Burial will be held at a later date. Memorials may be given to OSF Hospice in Bloomington or to an organization of the donor's choice. Roger W. Ward, Gibson City. Roger W. Ward, 70, died Tuesday, July 1st, at his home in Gibson City. A private family burial will take place at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Heart Association. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.